from Somar, California.
Hi, I'm Leslie, and I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is July 28, 1988. I'm still amazed by that. Because I didn't come in for long term. I didn't even know what I was coming in for. I just knew I didn't have any OAs to go. And when I first got new, I thought it would be neat to have 10 years of sobriety, but I found out you had to get 10 years older, so that kind of slowed down the process of wanting it, you know? And I want to thank the committee for asking me to come share, and they've been awesome, and Harlan, and last night we went out to dinner. It was Harlan's wife's birthday, Zan, happy birthday, and we went out and had, you know, pie, and we celebrated her birthday, and she was at the meeting. And you know, but I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I absolutely do. And Todd, you did wonderful. 60 days, I couldn't even talk. In fact, the first time I ever shared at a meeting, my sponsor said, Leslie, you are so sick and self-centered and selfish, you just keep your mouth shut because nobody wants to hear what you have to say. And I thought, wow. And but I figured she was probably right, you know, and this woman loved me enough to be honest with me. I never thought about, you know, firing or doing any of that stuff that happens, you know, because I just didn't have anybody else to talk to. And so I took direction well. And you know, it amazes me. My world has gotten so big. When I was out there, I had a small world, and it was in chaos all the time where I went. And I was that white tornado that chopped through people's lives and left destruction and just never thought about it again. I just disappeared. And I'm a blackout drinker, you know, so I really like that because if you don't remember, it never happened. And, you know, you wake up with somebody new and you act like you don't even know them, you know? I'm like that little kid, I can't see you, you can't see me, you know? And my mom occasionally remind me of things, that's okay, I don't need to know, you know? I'd say, oh yeah, I remember because I don't want to have them tell me what I actually did. But most of the time, I knew to say I was sorry, and I was sorry a lot. And you know, and I didn't grow up in an alcoholic family. Most of my family drink normally; they just don't even think about it, you know. And they'd have cold duck on Christmas or eggnog, and I would consume most of it, and I don't think they ever paid attention. And my dad told me, he says, "You know, Leslie, if you're ever going to drink, you drink at home, you know." But if you ever smoke, you're out of the house. And I like nice things. That's one thing I never picked up was smoking. And I'm grateful for that because I knew I'd have one going and everything, you know, anything that could go, I want faster, you know. And that was kind of like my drinking. And my dad was so glad because when I was a kid, I was addicted to Pepsi. And my mom would hide bottles because I'd get really grumpy if I didn't have it when I got home. And when I gave up Pepsi, they were so pleased. They just didn't know it was for alcohol. Then they weren't quite so pleased after that, you know. And at 18, my dad says, you know, Leslie, if you just quit drinking, you'd be okay. I says, you know what, Dad? That's what's saving me, you know. I believe I needed alcohol early on, and I believe it kept me alive long enough to get to AA. Because AA does for me what that alcohol did. It just takes a lot longer, but it lasts twice as long, you know. I come and I do certain things, and I come to a meeting and I feel better, you know. When I drank, it was an instant thing, but, you know, shortly after that, got enough alcohol in me, it became disastrous. But it was a lot of fun at first. I had a lot of fun. At least in my head, I had a lot of fun, you know. And that's where most every action takes place, is in my head. You know, I was a driver that drove down the wrong side of the freeway. You know, I could have killed people. It never dawned on me because I didn't care about my life. You know, at 7, I thought, I'm never going to love anybody. I had a lot of people die in my family. I thought, I'm never going to love anybody. It hurts too bad. I'm never going to let anybody get close. So I put up those walls. And I knew my parents loved me. I just couldn't feel it. And they loved me so much, they almost killed me. They were my enablers, you know. They rescued me all the time. My dad was always paying people off. I wrecked their car. You know, And they taught me early on that I didn't have to be in church all the time, that God was always with me. And I knew I prayed every night, and I was always okay in the till morning, you know. And it was just wonderful. And so I had a God way back, and I would say, oh, God will take care of it, you know. And he did most of the time. And then I'd have those prayers, God, if you just get me out of this one, I'll never do it again, you know, until the next time. And, you know, my parents were very loving, you know, and I was just, I never felt like I fit in. I told my mom, I think I'm adopted, you know. I must be. I don't look like you. I wear glasses. Nobody wears glasses. I have all these things. I was a nervous kid, you know, always biting my nails and doing that kind of stuff. And I always lived on the other side of the mirror in the bathroom into magical land, how I wanted it to be, you know. When I went back for a family thing for my mom's aunt's 50th anniversary, they were all toasting, and they said, that's okay, Leslie, you can have your coffee. Nobody offered me a drink ever, you know. They hadn't seen me in 25 years, but they knew they didn't want to see me drink again, you know. Yeah, I was grateful my mom had a great big family because she'd always find people to go for me to stay with in my travels. Did a lot of geographics, you know, and I'll come to a state and I think, ooh, something looks familiar, you know. And they asked me to come speak in Salt Lake City one time, and I went back there and spoke, and they're driving me around, and, you know, they said, where'd you live in Salt Lake City? Because I lived there. And I said, you know, I don't know, but I can tell you where the bars I drank. And all of it looked familiar, you know. I was like, oh, the bar closed down after I left. Amazing how that happens, you know. But I had a lot of fun. I went to college, drank through college. It was great. Always waking up in different places. And when I went home after college and was living there, I'd call my mom and tell her she had to come find me, you know. And I told her kind of where I was and what it looked like, you know. And they would. My dad always say, you know, don't drive drunk. Just, you know, call us. And I had no problem calling them at 3 o'clock in the morning and having them rush and get me, you know. And my dad would bring my mom, and she'd drive me home, and my dad, you know, would drive by himself. And there was a lot of laughter. We took a lot of family trips, and there were a lot of secrets, too, you know, and it's just amazing how all that changes in my perception, you know. But I was always moving away, and it's interesting. I came here, and just before the meeting, I'm standing there, and Phyllis comes up, and she says, are you from Nebraska? And I thought, yeah. Kind of apprehensive, you know, because hate when somebody I don't know comes up and asks me I'm from somewhere. Have you ever been here? Maybe. Tell me what it is first, and I'll let you know. She came up and told me she's my sister-in-law's sister-in-law and her brother, and the world is so small, you know? I hadn't met them, or unless it was in my drinking days, if they went to the wedding. Don't remember that either. And it was kind of like my first wedding. I don't remember that a whole lot, except that I thought it'd be great to be married, you know. And I thought it was time, and he had everything I wanted. I could have all the animals I wanted. I loved animals, because I could get close to them, and kids. And I never really thought I wanted kids, and we had them, and it was cute, and it was perfect, and you know, but most of my relationships in work, whatever, I was either getting promoted or fired, depending on which way they wanted to get rid of me, you know. My relationships didn't last that long. From the time I married him, and everything, and divorced him, it was about a year and a half. And I went to college 3.5 years, and I figured, you know, I had a 0-point average, you know, and in sobriety, I went back and got my grades, and I found out I had okay grades. So that tells you I must have been a liar, cheat, and a thief, because I'm sure I did not do the studying. And I never knew that. You know, my sponsor would tell me, you know, you're a liar, a cheat. I'd say, no, I'm not. I'm the most honest person I know. You know, because I believed all my lies, and therefore I was honest. And I was like, wow, you know, I really do have grades for college education. I'm not going to give them back. See, I don't remember any of it. And so I married, and you know, and I wanted it to be wonderful, you know, but I'm a bar drinker, and when I go to the bars, I go to bed with people. And I'm not sure all these guys wanted me to take them home and go to bed. I just couldn't remember where I lived, and so they couldn't get rid of me, you know? Wake up and have a head beside you, and you're waiting for them to turn around. It was like, oh. Most of the time, I tried to dart out before they turned around, so I didn't know. I like the illusion of never knowing. And when Jack and I got together in the beginning of my, when I was drinking, and I'd wait till he turned over, and then when I'd go, oh, thank God it's him. And he never understood that sigh of relief every morning I had, you know? Because in my first marriage, you know, I'm a bar drinker, and I go to bar, and I go to bed, and I had that shame and that guilt, because I came from parents that were married forever, and people didn't do that kind of thing, you know? I never wanted to do that kind of thing. It just happened, you know? You wake up in strange places with strange people and strange things, and I was always amazed. One time, some guy decided to connect all my freckles with a pin while I passed out. Amazing how that just comes back. Jack's always amazed when he comes here to me speak because he always learns a new little bit of information. Just kind of darts in my brain every so often, you know? Oh, newsflash. And, you know, and I was amazed when that happened. You know, I was always amazed, you know? And it was exciting for me. You know, I didn't leave my husband because I didn't love him. I left him because I couldn't stand the shame and the guilt. And when I met Jack, I thought this is, you know, I trusted him. Somehow, deep down, I trusted him. And I never wanted to do that to him, you know? But shortly, when I left my first husband, I got a promotion and went to Page, Arizona, and I thought, oh, this is great. It's going to be a change. I'm going to go work for Mormons, and, you know, you can't drink. And I started to realize I had a drinking problem. In my first marriage, I realized that a lot of it was caused by my drinking, and I quit for 3 days. And I had a cousin. Her husband was in and out of AA because DUIs, and she gave me a 24-hour day book. I drank Pepsis for 3 days and read that book. And it was the most miserable 3 days of my life. And I also knew that AA didn't work because my husband's stepdad was in AA for 21 years. Obviously, it doesn't work because it can help his son get, you know, sober. You know, so I never thought about AA. For 3 days, it was horrible. I thought, why in the world would anybody quit drinking? You know, I just don't get it. So I packed my bags and went to Page, Arizona, and it was going to be different this time until I met my boss, and he said, would you like a cocktail? And I thought, okay, this is great, because I'm in the food and beverage catering business, and, you know, I'm around alcohol, which is always free, and I like that. You know, amazing, you get bartender, you know, manage, you kind of work your way up, but you still get free booze, and I liked it, you know, because I really couldn't afford all the time the way I like to drink. And I was there, and then my cousin was trying to get away from her husband that was drinking, and I got her a job, and, you know, in that time, that's where I met Jack. He was working on a show in Page, Arizona, and he was a real attraction for me. There was only one thing I ever did. He says that I actually listened to him, and I stand in a van with some other extras and women, and he told me, look out, and I did, and he hit me in the head with a Frisbee. Actually, it was his friend, and he says, I'm so sorry. Can I do anything for you? I said, oh, you can buy me a drink sometime. And he didn't think that was strange because he comes from an alcoholic home, you know? And he became a real attraction because he was dating my friend and he was talking nice about his wife. And I said, now there's the man of my dreams. And I thought, oh, this is awesome. So I put the moves in, we were at a bar dance, and I put the moves on him. He says, I'm with the other girl. And I said, can't even remember her name now. Trying to think, it's coming. Starts with a D. Anyway, so I put the moves on him, and he found my number, and I was unlisted, so I was impressed. So I thought, well, I should go out with him. So we started having this little hot romance, and I figured he's leaving, you know? And then I got fired, which I was getting fired, so he asked me to come down to Lake Havasu, and you know, I just didn't think about my cousin. She lost her job. She's got two little kids there. Never thought anything about it because I just didn't care. You know, it took me a long time to make amends to her and for us to get a relationship back in sobriety. It took me about 9 years of trying to do the right thing. You know, most of my amends have never really been easy. And we have a relationship today, and with a lot of people, and this friend of mine that I went to grade school and college with and everything, she says, "I can't believe it's so sad that you don't remember everything." I said, "I'm so grateful, you know? It's a really a blessing." And so anyway, I go down to Lake Havasu. He asked me to Lake Havasu, and I went down there, and, you know, we have this big, beautiful room with the spa and the bath, you know, and, oh, it was wonderful. And so I'm just madly in love because, you know, anytime I was with a guy, even if it was one night, I was madly in love for that night. You know, it didn't matter. I had to be madly in love. You know, when I met my husband, I thought I should know his last name before we got married after 3 months of planning it. And thought I need to ask that information. There are sometimes you need a little information. And so anyway, I was down there, and Jack's wife decided she's going to come visit him. And my dad was ill, and so Jack decided to send me home to Nebraska. And as the day I'm leaving on the plane, she's driving in, and I thought, ah, exciting. You know, I never thought about the people are hurt. It didn't dawn on me. They weren't anybody I knew. Who cares, you know? And I went to Nebraska and saw my dad in the hospital. My one friend and I went out drinking again. And it was the only time I wasn't driving and got in a bad car wreck. And, you know, she's got this hurt. And, you know, I'm telling them, I think I can walk home. And, you know, my poor mom gets a call from the emergency ward, you know, that here she has got my dad in intensive care and I'm in emergency. You know, my friend, she seemed hurt way bad, and I got the drugs. I was like, oh, yes, I hurt. Please. I always got what I wanted. And when I was younger, and they told me when I, at 18, I had a heart attack, and at 23, I had a stroke. And, you know, they said, if you're going to live, you know, if you're going to keep doing this, you're not going to live past 30. And I thought, oh, thank God, you know. That is not bad news to me. I've been wanting to die for a long time. I prayed to God, please let me die before my parents because I love my dad and my family. And I knew if something happened to them, I wouldn't be able to live, you know. And I prayed all the time that I would die early. And, you know, because I was, you know, when you tell me I'm going to die, I'm not afraid of dying. You know, that's not bad. It's living. You tell me I'm going to live forever, and that terrifies me. You know, I never planned on getting a little older and getting a few wrinkles and thinking, oh, I might need a facelift now, you know. Never thought I'd get to that point. And if I knew I was going to live this long, you know, I think I would have taken better care of myself. And, you know, Jack thought he could make a commitment to me because I was 29. And I told him I was only living to be 30. And he thought that was the commitment he could make to me. He still reminds me I lied. You know, and he met me in a... And so after I met him in Page, Arizona, I went home and I decided to pack my bags and move to California. I had an uncle out here, and he had been divorced, so he had me stay with his ex-wife. I stayed there about 2 weeks, and then she kicked me out. And my mom had another uncle, which I still have never found again, in Palmdale. And so I went up there, and Jack says, we're going to go out one night before his wife's coming home from his mom's. And he says, I give directions. Well, you know, as a drunk, you're always lost, you know. I always find my way, but it takes a long time. And he says, you know, he calls me, and I said, I can't find you. He says, well, come look for me if I'm not there in 10 minutes. And I thought, you know, I have a really bad feeling in my gut. You know I'm drunk. And I said, I'd get in my car, didn't take any ID with me. And I had a little Honda Prelude, and, you know, I was going about 60 miles an hour, and I, you know, turned in front of a big Oldsmobile head on. And he came upon the crash, and no ID, and he could tell him who I was. And he always knew I was kind of excited, and I think he kind of liked that, you know. And they took me to the hospital. It was a private hospital, so they didn't feel they had to keep me. And my heart stopped a couple times, and Jack saw me one time, and my heart stopped me yelling. And, you know, he looks at me, and I said, just let me go. And during that time, you know, I was walking towards the bright light. Now, I know the police are waiting there to take me to jail. And, you know, I see this bright light, and I said, oh, please, I'm ready. And God told me it's not done with me, and I needed to go back. And then they get my heart started going again. Shit. Yeah. Now I'm going to jail. And rather die than go to jail. I didn't like paying prices. And that's why I always left quickly. And so they decided to kick me out of the hospital, and I had crushed my windpipe, and hurt my neck and had broken bones, and they didn't do anything. And they put me in Jack's car with the neck brace and said, I hope you live close to a hospital because she may not make it. I thought that was better going to jail. But I'm sitting there and I'm drunk and I'm hurt, and Jack reaches over and he says, what should I do? And I can barely talk. I said, hotel. Just drop me off. And he thought that was a bad idea. He didn't want to leave me in a hotel to die because he's an Al-Anon. He's a rescuer. I'd never met a rescuer. I've been drunk, they would have left me. Here they go, out on the grass, just like many times when I was drunk. Dropped me off, and they didn't even take me to the door. And, you know, so he pats my hand. He says, well, be okay, I'm going to take you home. And I thought, oh, now, you're going to take me home, and you have a wife and son and sister at home. I thought, that, you know, I'm drunk and hurt, but that doesn't sound like a real good idea to me. But I told you, he comes from an alcoholic home. So he calls his wife and he says, I'm bringing a friend home. She's really hurt. So she greets us at the front door and they both have to carry me in. And Jack got a little nervous and dropped me. I thought I was going to die. I was like, ugh. And a couple days later, I'm coming to and I hear Jack's wife talking to his mother. Get her out of there. Took his mom a long time to like me. And so anyway, and I'm very grateful because if it hadn't been for her, I wouldn't be alive today. They had to feed me. They had to bathe me. Jack stood in the shower and held me up, and she washed me, and they turned me over. I had to be sat on the toilet, put in the bathtub, and, you know, couldn't do anything. And found out I had insurance, so the doctor went in and out of the doctor's office and went in a wheelchair, and then I got on crutches. And she's telling me about her marriage, and she thinks, you know, they have a lot of problems, and she's waiting for the kids to grow up so she can travel with them. And I'm saying, oh, no, Jack's very loyal. You know, I'm trying to tell her how to get her marriage back together, and because I like her now, you know. Didn't keep me from having an affair with her husband, but I liked her. And Jack says, stay out of it. Quit trying to help. Yeah. So she decides we should double date. So we're double dating. I thought, you know, I can't drink enough for this stuff. And I was on a lot of pain pills, so one night there, Jack decides to have a glass of wine. Half a glass of wine, can you imagine that? And I said, I'll have one too. He says, no, it says on that medication law you can't drink. I said, when whoever read labels. And I finally threw a tantrum. He thought that was really bad in front of his family, so he let me have wine. They found out what it did for me, that they gave it to me all the time. And so we double dated, and I thought, you know, I finally got a job offer, one in Texas, one in California. I thought, you know, it's a little bit too insane. I really need to leave, you know. And his dad come over, and I found out his dad always had women. He was sleeping with all Jack's mom's best friends and everything. So it was just kind of a normal thing for women to move in and come out, and, you know, mom setting Jack up with other women. And, you know, she tried to do that when we first got together, too, because she didn't like me. And she felt I was a homewrecker. Can you imagine that? So anyway, I moved to Texas. Jack, we weren't sure we were going to see each other, and Jack started seeing me, and he called, and his friend that I got on a double date called me, and Jack answered, and he said, oh my God, it's him. And poor guy, so, you know, we affected a lot of lives. And Jack comes down finally at Texas and he rescues me because I'm going to get fired, but I leave that little tidbit out. And you know, I lived on my own for a long time, had a lot of apartments, and you know there's a problem when you hide your alcohol from yourself. You know? You take it out quietly, you bring it in quietly, and you have one bottle of wine in the refrigerator. And you only put one in at a time, you know? And always had plenty in my luggage, you know, wherever I went, I had a lot of alcohol hidden. And the only person I was hiding it was from me. It's a good thing back, you know, if I had the problems with my memory that I do now, I probably would have never found it. It took me 4 months to find Jack's Cheerios. Not too long ago. So, but I never lost the alcohol, I can tell you that. And so by then when I'm moving back, Jack had asked his wife to leave and sister went back to live with her family. Somebody else and his son and mom, his ex-wife went to move up by Jack's mom. which really put the nail in the coffin for me. And and I moved in, and we were going to have this wonderful, exciting, loving relationship. You know, I'm kind of like when I drink, you never know if I'm going to be that puppy dog that wags its tail or the rattlesnake that just has a little sting to it. It's going to bite you. And I never knew, you know. And poor Jack, he'd never seen me sober, so he didn't know a difference of whether I was sober or whether I was drinking. And he just thought I was nuts. He would come home and I'd give him these cocktails, and he says, you know what, we got to quit drinking these at night. He says, I have a headache. Well, if you drink enough, you'll get rid of the headache. And I thought he drank a lot. I never noticed he didn't drink that much. I thought, you, in order to do the things you're doing, you have to be crazy. You act crazy, you know? I thought it was sure it was alcohol induced. I found out it was just alcoholics that induced it. And he comes across about Christmas time and he says, you know, we really need to quit drinking. And I thought, ooh, we don't really like the sound of that. And so I start sneaking it in more and out, and I had a job, and I knew I could no longer go to the bars, because the one thing I never wanted to do is go to bed with somebody else. I never wanted to have that guilt and that shame or have to make that. And I knew that, and I don't know where that came from, you know? And I just knew I trusted him and loved him. And so I started drinking at home a lot more and couldn't have Jack come in the kitchen because I put something in the cupboard and it took me a while to figure out which one it was, if he came in. And then he would only see me have one glass a night and I would be drunk. And you know, I have to wait to see if I was in trouble the next day by his reaction. How sorry I was, or how'd I get to bed? Who did the dishes? Did I do the dishes? I don't remember that part. When he went out of town, I loved it because, you know, when you're drinking alone, you can lay on the bathroom floor and just stay there. It's close to all the things you need. Leave your bottle that you didn't quite finish from the next before to drink in the morning, if you can keep it down. And when he was home, it was such an effort to have to try to keep it together. He'd put me to bed and cover me up, and he thought that he was this wonderful guy, you know, and his family thought he was wonderful for all the stuff he did. And, you know, I kind of made him my God, and we'd have these horrendous fights, but when you're drunk, he'll get over it, because if he leaves, it's fine, because I want to drink more, you know? And then one time we were up in Seattle, he was doing a show, and towards the end I poured a drink in the director's lap and told him how to do his movie, and Jack thought that was a bad career move. So he locked me in my room, but I had plenty of booze there he didn't know about. And he would always say, how'd you get drunk? I said, I don't know. Locked me in my room, and we drove 500 miles home, and he did not talk to me. And I thought, you know, I'm really in trouble here. And so I thought, I have to come up with something. So as we're coming off the off-ramp just before our house, I says, you know, the only time we have problems is when I drink. I think I need help. And he says, you know, I'll help you. I thought, oh, he has no idea how much I drink. He says, you only have one glass of wine and I just quit. I thought, that's not possible. I told him I need to go get help. He said, if you go get help, you know, you'll have to leave. And so I told him I quit, went home to my family's, took the alcohol in my suitcase, and it clunked in the luggage thing. He said, what you got in there? Perfume. I'll go fix it. Moved the luggage around, went home, told nobody was drinking. And it got harder and harder. And one time he finally left out of town, and we had another fight because I was always an embarrassment to him. And I embarrassed him in front of his family. So really, I didn't win a lot of points with his mother. So he was coming home to throw me out, I was sure. And finally, one day I woke up off the floor and I thought, you know, I can't do this anymore. Can't live with it. Can't live without it. What do I do? And I opened the pages up, yellow pages to alcoholics, you know, things. And, you know, never thought about calling AA, but I called a treatment, called these different programs. And I said, oh, no, I work. I can't come in all the time. I just, you know, part-time, you know. So they said, can you come in on Wednesday? And this is Monday. It's sure, I can come in Wednesday. And Jack's out of town for a couple weeks, so I knew I was safe. And so I called everybody I knew and told them I was an alcoholic and had a problem drinking. And I didn't know I had to do that, but I knew for myself if I left one person open, that I would call them when I needed to go out and drink. And so I called everybody. I called my dad, and he said, you know, Leslie, I think you have a little problem drinking, but I don't think you're an alcoholic. I said, okay, Dad, but I really am. And so anyway, I called my one friend, and I said, you know, I'm quitting drinking. I'm an alcoholic, but tomorrow night, let's go out and have one last drink because I'm going in on Wednesday. And we went out, and the same thing happened. You know, I got drunk, left my sunglasses, and lost a shoe. Now, when Jack found me, he found out I had a lot of parachutes, but they were only one. And they were always high. You would have thought I would have noticed I was walking with a limp, you know? Never understood that. But I'm a person that when I drank, you know, the first thing, the shoes and then the clothes, and they kind of disappeared along the way. I hated clothes. That's what he loved about me. I always shed my clothes fast. You could always tell the trail of clothes where I was. And there wasn't anything that major happened. I went in the next day and I signed all the papers. Are you willing to go to any length and do all this stuff? Oh, yeah. Paid the money, you know. And I started going the next, you know, and Jack comes home early. He had a bad day and he says, you know, I'll have a glass of wine. He hadn't asked for a glass of wine in a long time. I had one of those great wine. I couldn't even open. I was shaken. I mean, he was not supposed to come home so soon. You know, I couldn't even get out of bed. You know, I was just like, and I never had a real bad hangover, but when I got sober, I think I had a 3-month hangover. Oh, life was miserable. And he came home and I gave him this glass of wine, went out of the house crying, and he wasn't a big surprise. I was a little nuts, so it really didn't throw him any. And the next morning went out and I was going to church across the street because I figured I could roll out of bed and make it to church. And I told Jack, you know, I had to go in and get help. And he says, well, we'll wait and see. He was not impressed at all. Because I told him many times I was quitting. I never planned on quitting. I was just telling him that to buy myself some time. And so I went across the street to church, and this older woman there, Vernon, she was 76 at the time, and she says, are you alone? I said, yeah. She says, you sit right next to me. And I sat right next to her, and as I'm, the sermon ending, the pastor said, let's say a prayer for those who are trying to recover from alcohol. I thought, who told? I don't know anybody here. And I left crying, and Jack said, did God talk to you? I said, oh, yeah, God talked to me. You know, they even said a prayer for me. And I started going across the street to church and met Vern all the time, and she started taking me out to coffee on Sunday because I'm slowly getting sober, and I know the problem. It's Jack. Definitely the problem. I hate him. Because during my drinking, he got a little control thing going. Controlled the TV clicker, the checkbook, where I could go, what I could do. I had a problem that when I got sober, you know. And I went in and out of, you know, when I was in the care patient program, and I would show up when I wanted to, and I don't like to go certain things. And I hid it all the time. I just was an hour late or half hour late or due to traffic or something. And I always said something. And they said they were going to kick me out. And I said, you don't understand. I paid you. And they said, we'll give you your money back. And I thought, oh, man, I can't, you know. So I started doing it. And I'm so grateful for H&I. H&I started coming in. And this man came, and he had a little blue thing, and it said, I'm responsible. And he had sparkle in his eyes, and I don't think I'd ever remember him. But I was so impressed, and he had that, you know, I just felt comfortable. And, you know, nobody I went through ever stayed sober, and I got to, and I was the last person that ever planned on staying sober. These people needed to. They had kids. They had all this stuff. I didn't have anything, you know. And then this other panel came in. It was rainy. They didn't want to be there, and a woman and two men. And this woman shared, and when she got sober, her husband divorced her and took her kids away, and she never saw them. And then sobriety, she'd lost everything because she lost her job one time, and because she had to have heart surgery. And I thought, if this woman can stay sober, I can stay sober. She gave me her card, she said, call. So I start calling. She'd say, meet me at this meeting. I'd show up, this meeting. And Then every Saturday night when Jack and I had about 5 minutes together, we would have these great big fights. And I'd call her crying, you know, it's over. I called my dad one time and I said, oh, Dad, I'm coming home. Jack's throwing me out. We're done. He says, oh, honey, he loves you so much. You just stay there. And what he said is, he's got you. You're his problem, you know. He ain't coming back home. I really like this thing going on. I thought, oh, man, my dad doesn't even want me back anymore. I'm screwed. So as I'm going through that, in about 6 months, and they told us we could have our significant others come in. We weren't married yet. And Jack comes in and tells them they pitch him for Al-Anon. And he just thought it was for abused wives. And he told him alcoholism was not a disease. And that they were just trying to get insurance money. And he was not abused in any way. And they thanked him for sharing and hoped he never came back. So I'm still not liking. About 6 months of sobriety, he says, you know, why didn't you just drink? I was so devastated. He says, because you're more miserable to live with sober than you ever were drunk. Drunk, I passed out early and shut up. You know? Sober, I'm like that energizing bunny. I follow him from room to room to room to room, share my opinion. He's going out the door and I'm following him. You know? Because I'm afraid he's going to kick me out. I have nowhere to go. I'm drunk. You know, I'm not drinking, so I can't find another man because I'm not drinking, you know? And here comes Jack when he first comes home. You know, he's ready to have love in his heart and have this nymphomaniac-like girlfriend that he's just adored to come home to. When he came home and I'm sober, and, I'm not a maniac, I'm a prude. It's like, that's never happened. You'd be staying away from me with that thing, you know? I said, I've never done that. He's like, all the time. Why do I keep you around? I said, I don't remember. We won't be doing that. I don't like either, so it makes it doubly wham. And poor guy. I've just put him through so much. And so I decided my sponsor, she wasn't my sponsor at the time because she didn't want to sponsor me. But I didn't let that stop me, you know. I went to our first convention and I had about 7 months and I finally said, I'll ask her to sponsor me. And she says, you know. So I said, you know, will you be my sponsor? And I've been talking to her for quite a while and she says, no, I don't sponsor losers, and we don't think you're going to make it. She says, but you can call me. I thought, well, of course I'm going to call you. I don't, you know. And at that time, I met Van, and she gave me her number, and I put it on my wall for about a year before I ever started talking to her. And I loved this woman. Everybody was afraid of her and thought she was mean, and I didn't even think that at all. I believe she loved me enough to just trust, you know, be honest. Everybody I ever knew told me everything I wanted to hear and loved me so much, you know. You're wonderful. Oh, yes. And so anyway, I decided I should have her over for dinner so she could get in my group of behind me of leaving Jack. And she came to dinner, and we waited till after dinner, and Jack was in the other room, went in the kitchen. I said, so what do you think? She says, well, I don't like him either, but you picked him. I thought, this isn't going well. And, you know, and I would call her and say, you know, he's not letting me watch what I want. He comes in, flips the TV, and then walks out. She says, honey, you made him your God. He's not going to give it up easily. It's going to take time. I thought, well, this sucks. She just listened to me whine and complain. And then I would always say, I know. The minute I told her I know, she hung up on me. She said, you're not listening anymore once you tell me you know. I learned not to say that. I was like, oh. And Jack loved it because she was mean to me. We pitched him for Al-Anon a lot, and then I decided, well, I should take him to a meeting. I told him that everybody thought he was a figment of my imagination, which isn't a big surprise. I had a lot of figments of my imagination, you know. And so he went to my Mason Lassen meeting, and he gave me my cake in my first year, and he said, this is nothing but a social club. I saw nothing social about it. I was in my seat. I would go in, everybody sat in their seat. I may not know them, I may never talk to them, but I like knowing they sat in their certain seats, you know, it just gave me that comfortability. And I was devastated. And then that night he went home, got in the shower, and worked all 12 steps. I decided to tell me how to run my program. I thought, I'm never taking you again. But went to a lot of AA things, and thank goodness I got around a lot of people that were into action and service and that I admired. You know, when I was out drinking, I never admired anybody. I didn't have heroes. I didn't want to have heroes because I could care less. I have a lot of heroes today, you know. And Jack and I had these big fights, and one time he got really mad because we still had alcohol in our home, and I really didn't want to leave it just in case, you know. And I'd saved this bottle of champagne that I had. And he came home and he took all the alcohol out and he says, I know what this fight's about. And he decided to break all the glasses with a sledgehammer and glass flying. I said, you know, don't break that one. I'm saving it. Well, that was the wrong thing to say. So I went in the bedroom and called my sponsor and talked to her. And he looks around and he sees, you know, there's craziness going on and I'm not reacting. And I just kept walking away. And then in my first year of sobriety, I started asking God for a change in my life. And Jack's son came to live with us, and his sister. I called my sponsor. I said, that wasn't the change I wanted. She says, I told you to be careful how you pray. Keep it basic. There's prayers in the big book. Leave it alone. And she said, Leslie, you need to pray every morning and every night on your knees, naked. And she says, it's not because God doesn't really care if you're on your knees or not, you know, but I needed to be humble enough, you know? And she says, besides, Liz, you were down on your knees for a lot of other stuff and didn't care who saw you. So what, you know, what difference does it make? So I've never been that afraid to have anybody see me get down on my knees and pray it every night when I've been there, if I'm with somebody. And I thought I didn't need to read the chapter 2 of the agnostic in the big book because I believed in God. Just had a small problem I read in there as I was at a book study. Amazing how those help. It said about trust. Oh, you're supposed to trust him, because I gave it to him every night and took it back in the morning because he had enough time to make any situations change. And now we got two kids in the house and me. We're all kids. He's the dad because he'd been the dad for a long time. And it was just insane. And I would call my sponsor and say, I hate this, you know. And she says, well, if somebody's going to leave, it's going to be you, because of the kids. And you know, Jack had just started getting into Al-Anon, and we went to a convention and took our son with him. And you know, it was just insane. And he was getting to a place, he had been, you know, in a house of craziness and stuff, and he ended up running away from home one time and stayed away for a long time. And I got to tell you, our son's coming up this weekend today sometime with our three grandkids, and we have a good relationship, but that took a lot of time to mend. And when he would call and we didn't know where he was, and he'd call, I'd say, thank God you called. I don't care what you've been. I don't care what you do. Because I sponsored enough people by that time to know that unconditional love. And I don't think without sponsoring people, I could have ever gotten that, learned how to give that unconditional love, that you don't have to be, you know, just stay sober, you know. And I was crazy, you know, and so I'm new in sobriety. And, you know, I always called my sponsor every day. And I found out, it wasn't to call every day, it was when the phone was too heavy and I couldn't call, she knew to call me. But if I wasn't staying consistent, she wouldn't know to call me. And so I would call her all the time and found out a sponsor's not there to tell you what to do, but to give you options. And if you don't check with her, you do it your way, and it's usually into the wall. And sometimes I just didn't want her opinion, so I wouldn't share things with her. So you know, all my life, 25 years, I wanted booze, so I thought that's gonna fix it. I was in to fix it, and God made sure I had all the finances to fix all that stuff. So get my eyes fixed first because I couldn't see very far away, and I could see, and so I decided to get boobs because then I can see them. And, you know, so I go and have these boobs done. And I had never been so depressed in my life. I woke up, I got these things on my chest. I felt like bricks. And I'm afraid of them. And I feel like a football player, you know? And oh my God, what have I done? So I called my sponsor and I said, I'm so depressed. She says, you didn't ask me what I thought. I said, of course not. You asked me if I knew what I was doing, and I would say yes, and we'd just go from there. And so I went to the doctor afterwards, and he took the bench off, and he squeezed him. I thought, oh, you can touch him. Okay, I'm okay. So I made it through that catastrophe. And so we decided, Jack asked me to marry him one time when my parents were out here at his mom's house and gave me a ring, and she let me know how I ruined Jack's life. And so anyway, I called my sponsor. I said, she says, no, not for a year. And I said, okay. So it wasn't quite a year, and Jack asked me, and my parents happened to be visiting. He says, you want to get married this weekend? So I called my sponsor. She says, you know what you're doing? I said, oh, yeah. She says, I'm not going to fix anything. I said, I know. But I'm going to do it anyway. We're not really, we're starting. Jack went into Al-Anon after I was about a year and a half sober. And you know, at first I really thought he needed Al-Anon until I realized there are no men sponsors when he was there. So he got a woman sponsor, and that's not okay in AA, you know. I thought, I have a woman sponsor. It's not okay for you to have a woman sponsor. We fought about that for a long time and realized we had to stay each other program because she's the best thing that ever happened to him. She got him into service, and I had to make my amends for her for judging her, you know, and that she was the wrong thing because he got exactly what he needed at the time. And he started doing Al-Anon, I started doing AA. So when we got married, we had an AA side and Al-Anon side, and it was just, you know, wonderful. And we get married. And after 3 days, the romance was off. Because now it's real, and we've heard somewhat about commitment in AA. You know, so now I've got to stay. And my sponsor told me, you got to quit saying you're leaving. You know, if you're going to say you're leaving, you better be prepared to leave. You know, and early on, my sponsor told me, you know, Leslie, you need to learn the traditions because you don't work well and play well with others. And I found out I need those tools when I was 3 years old. You know, I punched people out or took what I wanted. It didn't bother me. Obviously, I took it, you know, took husbands too. And so anyway, she made me learn the traditions. She says, you don't need the steps right now. You know, you're incapable of it anyway. And I learned the traditions, and I'm very grateful for that. I just did a workshop a couple weeks ago on sponsorship, traditions, and relationships, because I believe without good sponsorship and having somebody you completely trust and be honest with, you can't learn the other stuff, because if I don't get it with my sponsor, how am I going to learn to have another relationship that can be somewhat like that, you know? And without having the traditions in my life, you know, I can't have a good job and I can't have a relationship. So I needed all those, and they've always been very important to me. And I did my first fifth step when I was about a year and a half sober, only because she made me. And you know, I found out when you do them right away, it's really good, but most of them are lies. When you lie your entire life, it's all on paper, it's what you believe. And half that stuff never happened. And some worse, you know, and I've done several inventories, and it's amazing how life changes or how you perceive things to be now than you did then, you know, and I still had a few secrets I left out. So after we're married, I had a few of those secrets, and so Jack and I hate each other. About 6 months of sobriety, I asked my sponsor over for dinner again, and she sat at dinner and told Jack he didn't have to live that way, and he could get rid of me. I thought, I am never asking you over for dinner. And thank God Jack hadn't been in Al-Anon long enough to know that he could throw me out or detach enough. And we made it through it. And every time I would call my sponsor, she'd say, Leslie, if you don't work it out, you're going to keep running into this problem over and over. And when it's good, you can leave. And I learned to do that in my jobs and my relationships. And when it's good, I never want to leave. But when it's bad, I'm out of here. First thing that goes in my head, I got to leave. Don't know where I'm going, but I got to leave. So my sponsor made me start saving my money. She said, well, if you're going to leave, you better have enough money to leave with. So I started getting this nest egg. And when I had enough money, I didn't want to leave. And I've maintained that nest egg. My neighbor told me, you got to have your own nest egg. My dad told me that. My mom always says, your dad never told me to have my own nest egg. Only because I think my dad knew he was going to have to take care of me if I didn't have my own nest egg. He had a little smarter than I thought. And so anyway, and every time I've gotten rid of the nest egg, something happens and I want to leave. And then I can't leave. You know, I had that first sponsor for the first 5 years, and then she just took off. I don't know where she is today. You know, but she was one of my greatest heroes and taught me the stuff I really needed, and that, you know, I have to go to meetings no matter what. God's not going to come tap on my hand and say, you know, if you go to that meeting, you're going to hear what you need to hear. God knows where I'm supposed to be, and he sends the messenger. But if I don't show up, he's not going to come home and say, you know, you missed it, you know? And I learned I go to meetings no matter what. No matter what's going on, if I have a meeting, I go to it. But I go where I'm supposed to be. And I started sponsoring. Finally, the light bulb went, and I called my psychiatrist. I said, I need to be committed because I got carpet after 5 years. And it was the wrong color. It was wrong everything. I said, I can't deal with life anymore. And he says, give it 48 hours. And I waited those 48 hours, and I was riding my bike. And it says, Leslie, that your sponsor can't fix you. Nobody can fix you. You have to do the work. And then I did an honest inventory. My life started changing. I put my name in central office, started taking newcomers to meetings. And got this one woman. She weighed about 300 pounds and combat boots and army fatigue. She got in my car, and she'd been in a board and care. And she says, don't worry, I won't hurt you. I said, that's right, you can't. And first thing, she went to this meeting, she says, I'm not staying. They all talk about their gardens and this and that, and I'm a board and care, and they don't know what it's like. I said, well, you're in the board and care because you have bad behaviors. And if you want to get out of there, then you have to act right. And, you know, I finally got to see, you know, I got to see, show her how to dress and got to take her dress shopping. And one day she called and said, you know, I really wanted those combat boots, but I got the nice shoes, you know. Beautiful, beautiful child of God. And just, you know, she had some other mental problems. And she would call me and she said, I'm going to kill myself. I said, you know, you don't have to tell me you're going to kill yourself. Just ask me to call back. What she gave me to the greatest gift is she learned to trust me completely. And I have found that is the most valuable gift anybody can give me. You know, there aren't enough presents, there aren't anything that can touch that. And Jack and our relationship's getting better, and we're getting along. And he would go with me sometimes when I just thought I couldn't handle it. And in the beginning, I start sponsoring people, and I tell my sponsor, nobody's staying sober. She says, well, you are, you know. And you're going to get all the crazy ones because you're crazy. I'm going to get what just like you gave. And I thought, oh. I remember my mom at 7 saying, you know, I hope you have kids just like you. And I thought, I ain't having any. Never, ever. I'm not babysitting. I don't like kids. And I'm never going to get married, never have kids. So God has a sense of humor. And then I had her in my life, and Jack and I decided to go on the sober trip for the first time. And we set it up, and earlier that year, his dad died in November. Because of the program, we got to share. And I said, take the third step prayer and share it with your dad. He says, you do it. I said, no, because your dad knows you came from no faith. And he'll understand a lot more. And he got to do that, and we had a clean slate when he passed away. You know, and I loved his dad. And, you know, he says, let's go home to your families for Christmas. I haven't been back there in 15 years, you know. We got to go back there at Christmas, and it was awesome. And during that time, we go to meetings like we always have, and went to, you know, the Fox Hall group in Bellevue, Nebraska, and heard it was good. And I was walking in late with my dad because he's always a little slow. And at the end of it, Peggy Martin turns around and gives me her card, and she said, if you're ever back in town, give me a call. 2 weeks later, I called Peggy because I talked to my dad, and he's in the hospital. And the night before, we had to put our dog down, and it was a horrible thing. And I thought, who'll be up at 6? I called my mom because it's a little bit later there. And so, what are you doing? She said, well, I'm getting ready to take your dad to the hospital. And I said, really? I said, does he know? And she says, yeah, he wants to go. I thought, oh, because I just told Jack the night before. I said, my dad's really bad. And he says, yeah, but he's been bad. I said, no, he's really bad, you know. Just that gut feeling. And I talked to my dad 10 minutes before he died, and he says, Sugar, he says, I want you to go on that trip, and I want you to have a good time. I said, Dad, I'm not going for a couple weeks. He says, I know, but I want you to go and have a good time. Because he knew I probably wouldn't have gone, and he knew he wasn't going to be there. And he says, I love you, Sugar, you know. And I can see or hear his voice. And, you know, during that time at Christmas, we had gotten this new little puppy and took her home with us, and she saved me. And I called Peggy and I said, Peggy, I'm on my way home. My dad just died. And Jack couldn't go with me, could only come in for the day. And I'm very grateful. And she came and was supportive, and I got to be there. But I had clean slate with my dad. My dad loved AA. The first time I took him to an AA meeting, he said, I don't need no meeting. I'm not an alcoholic. And after he saw a man get up his age and share from his heart, my dad couldn't put enough money in the basket, and he became the greatest promoter of Alcoholics Anonymous you've ever met. And he would tell Jack's family, he said, just go to meetings. You don't even have to be alcoholic. You feel good, you know? They're drinking. They don't want to feel good, you know? They already do. And he would tell his friends when their kids would get sent or they would get sent, he says, try it, you know? Because no matter how sick he was, he'd want to go to a meeting with me. And so I went home for the funeral and I got to be there supportive of my mom. And I found at first when I didn't want him to die and I was afraid of losing him, my sponsor said, you know, don't pray, just pray for the willingness to accept what is for him because you don't know what's right. And I did that. And I also learned to love him to the very end and not cut myself off. And I got the gift because I loved him completely and he had a part of my heart that will never go away. And I love that man. I just absolutely adored him. And I got to be there for my mom and then I went home and went on my trip. Because Jack, Anita, and I needed that week to be together because he was going away. We didn't know for a show for 3 months, and I was going back home to help my mom. And I got to be of service to her, and Peggy had people come and take me to meetings and see her and spend some time with her. She's one of my great heroes. And came home that, when we both got home the day our Rottweiler, one of our dogs died, you know, and it's like, man. And I've gotten to go through that. In my first year of sobriety, that woman I drank with on my last drink, you know, she asked to be the godmother of her son. On my first birthday, he was born. And you know, that was awesome. I got to be there for the birth and I got to be there for his death because after I was almost 11 years sobriety, he passed away. And I loved him and I got to be there and I got to take care of the funeral arrangements and everything for her. Made my nest egg go away. And he died on Easter morning at 6:30 a.m. And during that time, I told my neighbor, Verna, I said, you know, I wanted to be a minister. I was sitting in church, and I've always wanted that dream when I was a kid. And she says, Leslie, there's many ways to minister, and I think you're doing a good job. You know, and I always know God has a plan, and Jack came home from a convention. He was down in San Diego, and I said, you got to come home. And he got to share about losing his daughter with him, and we got to be there completely supportive. And after the funeral, we let all these balloons go up, you know. And Jack's mom died at that time, right after our godson died. And before she died, we sent her on a trip before we even knew she was sick. And I said, Jack had always wanted to send her to Hawaii. And I said, one day, I said, let's send her. And he says, well, ask her. And I called and I said, you want to go to Hawaii? And she says, why? And I thought, well, I never asked that. Because we want to, you know? If I could have done an anonymous, it would have been great. And she got to go on to Hawaii and have the trip of her life. And when she came back a month or two later, she had cancer and it was all over. And I had a clean slate. I didn't have to feel guilty. I didn't have to do something wonderful because she was dying. I just got to be there. And for my birthday, she never sent me a card. And for the birthday before she passed away, she gave me a birthday card and it said to a terrific daughter-in-law. 12 years later. Of doing the right thing, cards, Christmas cards, and showing up. You know, I made my amends to Jack's ex-wife. He would have told me I would have gotten trust and done all this stuff from it. I'd have done it years ago, but I had to be 5 years sober, and you did it when you're ready, you know. And it's amazing. And I got to go, we were there when she passed away and with hospice care and went to funeral. Everybody at church told me, she says, you were her favorite daughter. And wow. She says, Leslie, all your cards and everything meant the world to me. I'm sorry I didn't tell you that. And she would call and she'd be afraid and I would tell her about God and my faith and my strength because girls I sponsor, I'd say, you know, I said, just take my God. He's so big and he laughs all the time, you know, because I ask for help and he just sits up there and laughs and says, if you just move out of the way, it'd be okay. And Jack's been active with guys in Al-Anon, and I see the destruction the alcoholic does to them. And, you know, in sobriety, you know, we finally got all sober dogs. Makes a difference, you know, because even the dogs get nuts, you know. I felt bad. I had this dog, a picture of insanity. She'd get stuck fighting with Rottweiler. She would get stuck in between a wrought iron fence and try to fight. Not only did she do it once, she tried at the other end of the fence. I think, oh, you poor thing, I rubbed off on you. And I would look and say, some of those are my best teachers. All my fears I've been able to get through. This girl I sponsor, I got it from a 12-step call. Because, you know, if I went and sponsored the women, I want them beautiful and do this and do that. And, you know, that's not what I get, you know. I get women that are hard and tell me where to go. I said, I didn't know you could do that. Hang up. It's like, oh, they've learned not to do that. Got this woman. She was moving up here from Texas. And I've always had kind of fear of handicaps and different things. And she had shot her leg off. Seemed like a good idea at the time. And she says, no movies, you keep walking. She says, ha! She says, you never realize how bad you want to live until you're going to die. And I pick her up, and, you know, I got to see her through sobriety and go through with another amputation of trying to fix it and all kinds of stuff. And then I got to go with her to the prosthetic doctor and have legs and arms hanging all around. I thought, I'm over this fear now, God. You know? And she never knew I was afraid. And she'd say, well, I'm afraid. I don't want somebody to know. I said, honey, I was afraid at the beginning, and I just kept walking. I just adore her. And I love sponsoring. You know, sometimes I think, oh, why do I do this? You know, you get your inventory taken. But they say, I hate you. You know, it's all your fault. You know, but God was just preparing me for what I was going to have to deal with later. I realize that now, you know. And I've had some health issues in my sobriety and found out that I have narcolepsy and a couple other sleeping disorders. So Jack lives with a very exciting life. And walk in my sleep, I punch him, set the house on fire. Walk away, can't find things, forget things. It comes house and the house is smoldering. You know. Makes him a little nervous. And my mom always comes out to visit. And then I walk outdoors. So he's learned when we're in hotels, he puts the latch across, you know. And now I know I drank it, just passed, made me pass out to be able to lay down quietly. And so I finally went to a sleep disorder doctor, and he says, how have you survived this long? I said, I don't know. Fall asleep driving. And I don't do that. They put me on a medication, and they told me that, you know, it still wasn't working very well. And so Jack started helping, taking the kids to school. And I sleep, so, you know, I'm glad God showed up this morning, because I'm usually still asleep and sleep till 9 or so, because that's when I really get good sleep. And then a couple of years, about 5 years ago, we were down at a convention, and I've always told Jack, I said, you know, I have stomach problems, I'll eat something wrong, I'll say, I'm dying, take me to the hospital. He says, well, if you're not dead in the morning, I'll take you. So we're at a convention down in South Bay, and, you know, 4,000 alcoholics, so they had to have an ambulance close by. And so I had a good night, and I woke up, I remember going to the bathroom, and then I don't remember anything, and I heard him going, and our dog had just died earlier, and I heard him saying, Jesus Christ, oh my God, Leslie, oh my God. And I thought, oh, he's so sad, I wonder who died. And I could hear him, and I just felt so bad, and I was trying to fight to see who it was. It was me. And he had accidentally gotten up, he's never gotten up and heard me, and got up, and he looked around and found me in a pool of blood on the bathroom floor, because I was awake, but I went to sleep in between my walking to back to the bed. I was in a hotel, and I had cement floor and, you know, all that other stuff, and I hit my head several times on the way. They just give me CPR, and they called the front desk, and they said they'll have somebody ride up, and all of a sudden I remember him shaking me, and I said, what? He said, what happened? You're covered in blood. I said, oh, no, somebody break in. So the paramedics come up. He says, you have to put clothes on. I said, why? He says, paramedics are coming. I said, I don't need paramedics. Can't think, and I can't feel anything, And so they come in, they said, what do you remember? I said, oh, God, my husband was shaking and yelling at me. They thought he beat me. They're closing it off for a crime scene. Paramedics come out, and they said, we better lay you down. And, you know, when your heart and everything stopped, it was trying to fast forward, you know, and I was like, oh, trying to catch up. We went to the hospital that night, and it's 4 a.m., you know, and they're loading me in. I said, oh, God, did they use the flashers and everything? He says, yeah. I said, always miss that part, you know? Miss the excitement, you know? I'm passed out, you know? Got tubes everywhere. Jack says, you know, if you die, I'm going to be the most attractive man at the party tonight. And the nurse just looked at him, you know, we're at the convention. Then he proceeds to make the nurse mad because he says, so you're working on 4th of July? And she says, yeah. He says, so this must be the worst night. She says, oh, no, I'm taking that off. I'm going to go drinking. He says, well, you know, we're having an AA meeting right across the street. Maybe you'd like to come visit. Never saw her the rest of the night. And that's happened a couple times, you know. Poor Jack, he never knows what he's going to wake up, you know, and I quit breathing. And he always tells me, breathe. It's like, ugh. I sponsored this woman for a lot of years, in and out. And I'll share one more thing before I get there. Anyway, I had a friend in sobriety, and Vanda, who gave me her number for the first person I ever called. And we talked every day on a daily basis for 12 years. And she'd wake up and call me and say, morning, darling. And she'd talk forever, and then she'd hang up, and then she'd call and say, what was in your voice? What's wrong? During that time, I'd gone through a few sponsors, and then I had my one sponsor, and she died about 3 years ago, and with 42 years of sobriety. I've had tremendous gifts, and she ended up getting cancer, and she got really bad, and I called Jack, and I said, I'm bringing her home, and I'm going to have her stay with us. And my cousin had come out for a visit, and she saw Vanda. She said, Vanda's going to die here. I said, yeah. She said, well, I don't want to love her. And she fell in love with her, you know, not only Vanda shared her life with me, she shared her death with me. And it was absolutely awesome. And I had the house full of AAs, and Jack and I would sleep by her bed at night. And, you know, my cousin was there and got to go through that experience and not be afraid. And her grandmother died 2 years ago, and she got to be there with her mom for her grandmother. Now that just gets passed on, and we never know, because we show up at the right place and do the right thing. They never know what's going to happen. And during that time, I met Tamara, and met her at a meeting far away, and she says, well, I gave her my card, and I said, call me, and she did, you know, and she didn't have a car, so, you know, I'd start taking her meetings, and she said, well, I don't know about this. I'm not sure I want to stay sober. You're in a day, I'm out of here. You know, it's almost 4 years, you know. Amazing how that happens, and I'd say, okay. And she'd tell me she's not going to meeting, and, you know, my friend and my heart's dying. I'm not wanting to go to meetings, and I talk her into going to meeting. I thought, why did I do that? Now I have to go. I have to pick her up. I said, you're never going to get a car because I have to go to meetings because I have to take you. Can't do it for myself, but I could do it for you. You know, another alcoholic, it's much easier. And and she's been there through a lot, and she wasn't sure. She had kids, and I couldn't understand why she can't go to meetings. She needs to be home with them. It's too hard. It's too this. And I said, well, you know, you drank and weren't there, so why didn't it matter if you're, you know, go to meeting not there? And then she was very delighted because this girl I sponsored went in and out. She finally went into her program, and she ended up not having anything. The kids got separated. There were four of them. And after she was in there a couple weeks, Grandma called and said the littlest one needed a place for a couple weeks. And I was out, and I said, absolutely not. And Jack said, because Jack said, no kids. You know, we almost divorced over at one time. And he sat at the dinner, and he says, well, you know, before you say no, we should talk about it. I said, you've always told me no, so why talk about it? I've had it come up before. So we took the little one in, was supposed to, and only for a couple weeks, and then her mom got out, and I let her come on the weekends and have all the kids, and Jack saw the two little ones playing together and missing each other. So Jack said, well, why don't you just let her stay here, too? And I thought, oh, two. First 2 weeks, it was fun. 3 years later, and it's really exciting. And I don't know why the mom can't get it, and I got to, because she had kids. I never had kids. I didn't have anything to, you know, really keep me sober. Got these two little damaged kids that have disease of alcoholism and got them in my home, and I have active alcoholism in my home, and nobody's drinking. Dogs get nuts because little one bites her and, you know, do all kinds of stuff. And Jack and I have had a lot of trouble. We took temporary guardianship when we were back in Iowa, and Clancy was there, and Peggy, and I was trying to decide what to do because I told this woman I would never take a legal action. And it really, really tore me apart. And Peggy says, can you live with yourself if something bad happens? And Clancy, she broke her promise. She's not staying sober. That's why you took them, you know. And she went out. She had like 90 days and went out and started drinking. And I got the kids, and Tamara's got hers. And learn a lot, you know, on how to do this stuff. And, you know, reading every book. Now all my magazines are parent and child, you know. bipolar child and how to live with survive. And because my little one's got bipolar and ADHD, the other one's ADD, and got a blind chihuahua, and God gave me a three-legged black lab. Now, if that isn't a sense of humor, that everything's rescued. I'm rescued. Everything in our house is rescued. And now she's diabetic, so I have to give her shots and, you know, feed her chicken and vegetables twice a day. I got kids on pills and vitamins. Everybody's got pills and shots and vitamins, dogs, and, you know, it's really exciting. I left them home with the nanny this weekend. And I have to pay them well to keep them. And my kindergarten, the little one was in kindergarten, and she's getting kicked out. And because she doesn't work well and play with the others. She antagonizes all of them. She saves the best for me. And they're just a blessing in my life. They teach me a lot of stuff. My three-legged dog teaches me a lot about a lot of stuff because she had bone, and dogs hold the bone with both legs, and she found a way to do it, you know. Because she was just excited about having something in front of her. And I got this little book, Surefire Ways to Wake Up as Happy as Your Dog. And it's about Munchie. And, you know, you never have to worry about Munchie at the local bar drinking off over a lost love, because Munchie knows not a lost love. Munchie loves what's in front of him. And just rescued this new little dog, and he thinks he's Cujo and King, like about this big, and he's like 4 pounds. And he bosses everybody. He thinks he's big, therefore he is. You know? And Mia said to me, she said, Mommy, one time, she said, you know, when they first came, they wanted to call us Mommy and Daddy. I said, oh, no, you have Mommy and Daddy. She said, well, let's pretend they're dead. I thought, well, that's not good either. You know, so we went on to get permanent guardianship, and then this last year we were in a year-long battle of adoption. And they decided they wanted to fight. They knew, you know, they thought they had a good shot. And talk about your inventory taken. I was the worst person they thought that ever lived, and they took my inventory very good, and I had to sit on the stand for almost 8 days. And not to explain anything, just yes or no, or I can't answer. And I did a lot of I can't answer, because there were stories behind it, and the judge cleared it up. And then they said, they asked me about this one woman, they gave me a name, and I said, they asked me her name, and I said, Doldeman, but I didn't know the last name. She said, how can you not know the last name? I said, oh, never had to think about it. Wasn't planning on this question. And finally the judge says, because of AA? I said, yes. You know. And so we got permanent, we adopted the little girls in October 29th. And now it's permanent. You know, Jack and I almost, you know, had a real hard time over trying to get it. One day he came home because we're really having a difficult time. And I said, come in, we're going to read first three traditions if you really believe in this program. And we sat down and talked about we had to be a unity. We had to have come from a group rather than what's best for each of us. And we started doing that. And I wasn't sure I wanted these little girls. They're hard. I feel I had a lot of emotions about the mom, because I've seen women lose their kids, and I've seen them get them back. And I want to be on both sides of those things, you know. And the girls have taught us to be more of a team, because we have to do what's right for the family. And my little one gets out of the corner one day and she says, Mommy, she says, we need glue for our shirts. I said, how come? She says, because we need to stick together. She says, many things that touch my heart over and over again. You know, something I never thought I wanted, God put in my life so I could learn a little more. Every time I think it's going to be easy, it's not. I've heard it's never going to be easy. It's going to be struggles and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, I have a man of my dreams. We renewed our vows at 5 years and 10 years. And I know what commitment is today. I know how to stay in there and work it until it gets good. And just stay there and hang in there when it's bad. And just be nice and polite. You know, he doesn't need to know that I want to walk up, and he's sitting in his office just sitting there, and I want to walk up and hit him in the head, you know? And I've learned to take opposite action. I come in and kiss him on the head instead. No good reason, just because it's there, you know? And I have an absolutely awesome wife. I'm a grandma to three kids that is the same age as my little girl, 6 and 8, you know? A little bit younger. And we have AA and a huge family, and it just keeps getting bigger. I love all the women I sponsor. They are my best teachers. I have a great sponsor I check in with every day. And God, I can't imagine what life would be. And it's so easy. You miss a couple, miss a couple meetings and you think, oh, I'm doing okay. You know? I don't need meetings. I don't belong. I don't feel comfortable. I sat in this one woman's meeting and I said, nobody's coming up and saying hi anymore. Screw them. I don't need them anymore. And I think, did you put your hand out? No, why should I? I've been here a long time. and then I put my hand out and then I feel comfortable and pretty soon I'm back in the game again because I take those stupid actions. I can't tell you why this works. I don't know. I know, no matter what's going on, I love newcomers. They say, how's that going to help? I said, I don't know. It just does. You do these stupid little things every day and it just works. And I'm afraid to take any of them out because I don't want it to be the one that I need. So I pray and meditate. We pray together. My little girls, all they talked about was death and dying and killed and blood. And they've seen me get down on my knees and pray, and they talk about God. And they talk about the safety of God. And my little one, they had a green chart, green, yellow, and red at school, and she'd get on red, and every day she'd get out of the car and say, Mommy, I'm going to be on green like your eyes. I'd say, okay, and she'd get to the car and say, red, don't know what happened. She said, but Mommy, I'm praying to God all the time to keep me on green, And she says, but sometimes he doesn't listen. It's kind of like AA. Sometimes we don't listen. God's there, but we're not willing to hear it, And we have to do our part to take the right actions. And that's as simple as it gets, And I don't know. I have a life beyond my wildest dream, a man of my dreams. I have kids that absolutely adore. I love being grandma, And it's nothing I would have had on that wish list, I can tell you, And I really want to thank the committee and NAA. God, what a beautiful life. I hope you all stay, because no matter what, I never want to get to a place that I think I have the answers because I'm going to be dead. That I can give you the answers and I don't need meetings because I've seen that happen. I've seen a lot of people go out this year. And I don't want to be one of those statistics. I don't want those girls to have another drunk mom. I made a commitment to them to be their mother. And I'm in every way, I feel everything they feel. And they're my greatest teachers too. When I can look and laugh and see what's in front of me and be happy with that, my life is good. The only difference is in my head. And if I could remove it every day would be perfect, But I've got it. I guess I get to keep it, and I hope to stay here, and I hope you do too. Thanks.